Hey, Alex.
Hi, John.
You know what I hate?
What's that?
Oh, man. I hate everything. Everything. Everywhere. Yeah, I mean, all at the same time, all at once. I hate everything everywhere all at once.
Boy, howdy, do I have a movie for you.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's called Swiss Army Man.
No. No.
I want to give a preamble here.
Go for
small
it.
Thing, because I'm, this is very much hinging. This is my viewing of this movie, or this discussion, is going to be curious about you. Because when you watched this, you were warm on it the first time, mm-hmm. you know, when it came out in the theater.
Yep.
I watched it and I fucking love this movie.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, do I love this movie. But in the back of my head, I'm like, I don't know if this would possibly hold up to a rewatching. Like, all of the joy I took from it felt like this is a one-time experience. This is an in the moment. This is Ram Dass, be here now. And I was like, oh man, I want to watch it again, but I don't, because I feel like it's not going to work as well. I'm like, oh wait, John's done a rewatch recently. Yeah. And I'm about to talk to him about it.
It is lessened on the second watch. And, but I still enjoyed it. But I think some of the things that I liked, or at least didn't bother me the first time around, bothered me more. I think it could be a tighter movie. I think some of their flights of fancy distract from the overall thing. Their performances are so strong, and I think it's such a departure to me from Swiss Army Man, because it feels like, although some of the problems I still have are still some of the immature shit they do, it's a lot more mature in that it's like, oh, what if we had like characters like earn these emotional beats and have some of the schmaltziness yeah. feel like it's deserved or okay, rather than just like shoved into my eyeballs.
Yeah, they certainly did earn the emotional arcs, mm-hmm. which I really liked. Because I, you know me, I like a schmaltz, but I like a deserving schmaltz.
Yeah. And
yeah, this did it for me. The other thing that, I guess there's one detraction, and it's not really a detraction, but that man's voice has not changed very much since he played Short Round in Data.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some lines in here that I'm pretty sure he's quoting those old movies, and it really, it didn't take me out, but boy, did it, it drew my attention far more than I think it was meant to, because his voice is so fucking similar to his child voice.
It is. And I don't know about the quoting lines, because I have not watched Temple of Doom in forever, because that's the second worst one. But because I think one of the strengths of it is that it doesn't lean on that with him, is that I think there is amount of for people of our age or whatever, there's a certain amount of like, oh my gosh, it's that guy.
Yeah.
But the movie asks him to do a lot. And he's so good at all of it.
He's incredible. And, like, everybody in this is so fucking good.
Yeah. And he really blew me away. And it wasn't based on the like, oh, look at him growing up doing things in this kind of condescending way. It was just like, no, he's great. I really like him. And I really like Wayman.
Yeah.
Everybody loves Wayman.
I don't think I realized that he had a career in stunt choreography mm-hmm. During his hiatus from in front of camera. I thought he like went and, you know, he was a civilian. So when he does that first fanny pack fight, I'm like, dude, that's like a lot of this is actually him. Like, yeah. Holy shit. Like so I was like, I had to pause it and look it up. Like, oh, because apparently he's like a gifted martial artist and yeah. like literally makes these scenes for other movies.
What's wild is I saw an interview with him where he was talking about they shot this movie, and before it was done, COVID happened. So they had to pause. And then when they came back and, you know, finished it up safely. And before it came out, it was like calling his agent being like, give me anything. I need absolutely anything. Otherwise, I'm going to lose my health insurance. And no one was hiring him. And so like he lost his health insurance for a bit. And it's just wild to think about that can happen.
Yeah.
Because, you know, now he's everywhere. He's doing all this, you know. And I think that's great. Good for him. But it's just kind of wild that, like, that was, like, a year ago.
That is great. Yeah. He's so fucking talented that it's crazy that he, you know, the opportunities weren't there for him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he said, like, you know, I was looking at an interview about that he said, like, there were no good roles for Asian American mm-hmm. guys for a lot of years. And he just didn't feel like doing the stereotypical Asian thing.
Yeah.
And
like they won a whole bunch of Screen Actors Guild awards, and James Hong said, like, I've been on movies like not that long ago where it's still like a white guy playing an Asian and all this stuff. And
yeah.
So I think the absolute funniest outcome, it would be terrible, but the funniest outcome would be that the only award this wins is Jamie Lee Curtis for Best Supporting Actress. That they're like, we celebrate minorities by celebrating a white woman. Because I feel like
as horrible as that would be, I would never stop laughing.
Yeah.
Like, I would just.
That's a very, like, center left thing to do of like, oh, to celebrate minorities, Jamie Lee Curtis, put on your pussy hat.
Yeah, and or only the white guy of the Daniels gets the award. They give him half an Oscar.
I'm calling it now. Calling my shot like Babe Ruth. It's going to come out that that guy's a sex pest. I'm not saying like Harvey Weinstein level, maybe just, you know, Chris Hardwick, but he's a fucking creep. He looks
like which one?
That's Daniel Scheinert, the white Daniel.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He looks like a creep.
He looks like a creep. And then the fact that in the movie, he plays the S&M guy. Oh, so okay. He made a movie where Michelle Yeoh gets to like hit him with sex toys and spank him. Like, ooh, that's weird, man. That's Tommy Wiseau. Like, we need to do another sex scene, or the guy from Getaway hiring the Playboy model to be his love interest. It's just kind of it adds a layer of stank to it.
I don't disagree. However, if I had any way in the universe to have Michelle Yeoh put a ball gag in my mouth and spank me, I'm gonna take that opportunity. Afterwards, you can blame me if you want, but I'm the guy that had a ball gag in his mouth and Michelle Yeoh spanked my bottom.
I'm just saying, like, that's you do whatever. But I'm saying if it happens later, I would not be surprised. He just seems like some kind of sex menace. And I mean, I'm not saying anything illegal or anything like that. I just think he's kind of a creep. He gives off very creepy vibes.
He has very creep vibes. That was the first, earlier, before we recorded, it was the first time I looked at a picture of them. And immediately, like, ugh. He kind of looks like one of the guys from South Park.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever the blonde one is. I don't know either of their names. But he's got that, but, like, you know, he's not allowed to live near schools.
Right. But at the same time, you know, to be fair, I don't think Quentin Tarantino didn't really get Me Too'd. I feel like he kind of, like, was in between a lot of that because, you know, the focus was way more on, like, Weinstein and stuff like that. And he's kind of a fucking sex creep, too. I mean, there was that in From Dusk Till Dawn. He's like, what if I wrote a scene where Selma Hayek has to put her foot in my mouth? So, you know, maybe he will just gleam the cube on that. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like given recent Hollywood, it's probably not right to make an accusation, but statistically, it's likely. Yeah. You just throw a dart and you're probably going to hit somebody with
it's one of those things like I would be shocked, but not surprised if it happens, I guess is the best way I can put it. He gives off extremely creepy vibes. He also like called Malcolm X a crime movie. So I don't really like that guy. But whatever.
I'm of the opinion, much like cops, that people that seek the role of director have like weird power issues.
Oh, absolutely.
That I think it's just like it's I'm not saying all directors are like that, but I just think there's a very big overlap between wanting power over an entire thing. Your vision is the only thing that matters, and you not realizing that the woman in your apartment also has feelings and
rights. There's a certain amount of psychosis that I think is in common with a lot of these people, but I do think there's different ways to manage it and whatever. Because like you think about like Rian Johnson talking about the invention of Rose Tycho, and so I was like, I want to make a Star Wars character that would have talked to me in high school. Like that's one of the saddest things I've ever heard. But in your head, you're like, this is cool. I'm going to do this. So, but it's just it's different ways to make your fantasies come true, I guess. Whatever. But part of my point is
so bookmark this. You know, let's find out. You know, 10 years from now, we'll regather and see if this prediction has come true.
Yeah, and I mean, this is an absolutely unfair prediction, but it is sort of what I feel.
Yeah.
But like I do think that a lot of the juvenile stuff in this sucks. On second watching it, it's a lot of it's like too
okay.
Like the whole butt plug thing is just I didn't really like it when I first saw it and I loathe it now. It's so stupid.
Not a favorite of mine. I thought the sight gag was funny when that was the auditor award and their butt plugs when they should see it's just in the background.
Yeah.
But then when it pays off later, I was like, I was fine with it. But didn't jump out as like, oh, this is the height of this movie.
Yeah. And here's the question. This absolutely just does not matter because I was having fun in the fight scene in the tax. One of the first big fight scene in the tax preparers or the IRS or whatever. Why is Jenny Slate there with her dog?
I think she's one of the bodies that the transdimensional people can take over.
I guess. Yeah. But it's just like. It seems like it's a long way to go to get that specific person here when they can just take care of other people, you know, when they can just warp other people. Well,
I think the real answer is, I was looking at the trivia that Jenny Slate, that role actually had like a full subplot in the original cut of the film that was like half an hour longer.
Oh, geez.
Maybe 45 minutes longer. That she had a full thing. So maybe it made sense.
The thing is, like, for this movie, it doesn't really bother me. I bring it up because I noticed it this time around. But the first time around, I'm like, okay, well, this is fun. I'm just having fun and going along. And I think this movie does inspire a lot of just like joy and fun. It's sort of the, what if Rick and Morty had a soul, in a sense?
Yeah.
Cause I think I've seen people complain that it's just Rick and Morty, but it's not. It's, yes, there's multiverse stuff, but it's kind and not interested in showing you. It doesn't feel like it's trying real hard to show you how clever it is,
almost the opposite.
Yeah. You could go real hard on that real easy with this whole topic or this whole concept. And certainly I think Rick and Morty does that sometime, but particularly with the Daniels kind of shtick, oh, that would be real painful. And they managed to avoid
it. Yeah. Yeah. No, they're not afraid to be immature, which I like, because I think the emotional depth of this film is super, super good and subtle and really nice. But then it's offset by like, yeah, we also like dumb jokes about hot dogs and spraying mustard in people's mouths. So it's, yeah. One of my main discoveries about watching this film is I don't know if I can recover from this. Famous actor James Hong is in it.
Yes.
Who was great. He's been in everything good. I was shocked to learn, born in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
Just because my entire life he's been speaking with an Asian accent on the movies I watch. I just assumed he emigrated here, like maybe when he was 20, but yeah, born in Minneapolis.
Well, no idea.
That's fucking bananas. Yeah.
James Hong is great.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's one of those guys that's like been old forever. That's really fun. Like, you know, he was old in Big Trouble in Little China.
Rewatched it, watching him in the old age makeup. I know he's not supposed to be 2,000 years old in Everything Everywhere All at Once, but it's like,
yeah.
Hey, you did all right, James Hong. Way to go. You don't look like that. You don't look like a bunion with a goatee.
Yeah. I like in the beginning of the movie where like we're first establishing, like before even the multiverse comes up, we get the family drama and like, you know, kind of shows, they establish the family well. And then we realize that we're in an alternate universe where girls kiss girls. Man, this movie has everything. Wow.
Girls kiss boys.
Think about if that was real.
It's wild. Yeah, it's a wild world out there.
Yeah, so that's the first foreshadowing. But though I do like the first introduction of the kind of body being taken over when they're talking with the CCTV behind them.
Uh-huh.
And you see Wayman hop up on a table and start like cat jumping across the laundromat.
Yeah.
Like, oh, whoa, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, it's just going on in the background. That was a lot of fun. I think it also kind of handles that stuff really well, because I have one of the hard times I have with sort of this idea of like infinite universes and branching is do some spoilers for a decade plus old video game, BioShock Infinite, where at a certain point in the game, it's revealed that like, oh, well, there's an infinite number of universes and you're always going to be trying to rescue this girl. And there's always a lighthouse and whatever. But it basically like what it boils down to is like, well, if I don't save the girl, there's an alternate universe where I do. So who cares? To me, that's my opinion about that. It's like, so it doesn't matter. If I don't save the day here, I've saved the day over there. So the outcome's the same either way. It doesn't matter. And I think this does a good job of like, well, you know, explain that there's a bajillion universes. It sets up very specific rules about how you access them and like what causes those changes. It's not always just like, well, there's not necessarily a huge branching universe if I picked up my spoon first instead of my fork, even though that is a decision. And I thought they kept the rules a little loose, but they set it up well enough that it remained consistent and didn't fall into that trap of just like, well, if it's all infinite, then it's all happening at the same time and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, you said that before. I don't know on the show, but we've definitely talked about this before.
Probably Interstellar or something.
Yeah, but I like very much disagree because like who cares if the next universe it succeeds? This is, you know, it's valid in the universe. You know, like we're in a multiverse right now. I don't care if, you know, in the universe next to me, you know, I don't like this movie. It doesn't affect this, what we're dealing with now.
Right. But why is this universe more important than that universe?
It's not. But that's what I'm saying. Well, they're equally important. But so it's like, if I fail in this universe to save your life, which I've done on numerous occasions.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that it doesn't make me feel better that in the universe next door, I saved your life one more time. No. In the universe that matters, the universe we're watching is a tragedy has happened.
Right. But at the same time, a comedy is happening. you know, you saved my life and we're yucking it up over there. As soon as you say that it's all infinite, then it's all happen. Then it doesn't matter.
But I mean, we're literally living in a universe that's infinite right now. Like we're living in a place with the multiverse is like a real concept.
It's a real concept. That's a different thing from being like an actual empirical fact. I mean, we don't know that there's.
All right. So let's say they discover at CERN. Mm-hmm. The absolute proof of another universe, we can fly out to it, everybody's got cowboy hats on. Mm-hmm. There's another universe exactly the same as ours, except with cowboy hats. Mm-hmm. Do you now think that nothing matters in this universe?
No, because there's only this universe and the cowboy hat one.
Yeah, but you assume on the other end of the cowboy hat one, there's one where they're wearing sombreros.
That's fine.
It's a multiverse.
But the point is when you break it down to like each individual choice, I just don't feel like that individual choice matters then because it's.
Yeah,
it's,
I got you. I just don't think we're ever going to get on the same page on this one.
Eh. No, but that's my feeling about it. So I was worried about that going into this. But like I said, I think they set those rules up well enough. It still doesn't always like make sense. Like, why would she be a teppanyaki chef in this dimension? But whatever, like you get far enough away, you start branching off of your choices. Who knows what happens? Like the whole Rakakuni bit, which in retrospect, in second viewing, I think they spent a little too much time with. I thought that kind of like wore thin for me, but I still got a kick out of it.
I liked it, but that's coming from someone that has not seen Ratatouille. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm familiar with this being a reference, but like, I think maybe it's a little more fresh for me because I'm like, oh, that's that thing from that movie I haven't seen that Patton Oswalt might be in.
Yes, that's true.
I like the on the family note in the beginning. Not so much in the beginning, but I don't know a ton about, you know, the Chinese immigrant experience. But it reminded me of the kind of where I'm from, either Jewish or Catholic mothers, that kind of guilt, can't really talk about your feelings. So you say stuff like, you have to eat healthier, you're getting fat. Uh-huh. Like that's I was like, oh, I feel like, I think I know this family, even though I don't, like, this is not a world experience I've had. I'm like, this feels very familiar to me.
Right. It feels different from, say, the mom on Andor, you know, where it feels like it's done with a sense of, it sounds bad, but it's done with a sense of love, whereas Andor, it's like, I don't think anyone likes this guy, even his own mom.
Oh, you know, it was a good concept because I'm trying to like do it in order of introductions. When Alpha Waymond shows up in the elevator and that whole sequence where it's established that the unlikelihood of an event corresponds to the universe that you're borrowing from. Mm-hmm. So this is first introduced by him. Oh, you need 4 paper cuts in between your fingers, which is a, you know, 1 in 8,000 chance. There's a 1 in 8,000 chance universe right there. So once you reach those ratios, you can now borrow from her. Like, oh, that's a really fucking cool concept.
Yeah.
Which also leads to some funny stuff with him eating chapstick and her like swallowing a turtle.
Yes, I do. I do like that. And it's also just a chance for some goofy comedy that I enjoy.
Yes.
And it's a neat way to do it. And it's kind of like it's a nice device because later when she is starting to like figure out what's going on and she's kind of taking her matters into her own hands, she just starts like making up stuff to do to try to like get out of the situation. Like, I'll just try to I'm trying to think of what examples she does. When she like wipes James Hong's nose and puts it in his mouth and then it's like, okay, well that might get me somewhere.
I think this was Joy's idea or maybe the father. But they're like, just blow on his nose.
Yeah.
Like where she's going to like give this random shit. I did like how this would easily be the father being kind of dumb would fit into this well, you know, like that kind of stereotypical like dopey dad. Mm-hmm. But I like that he's kind of smart. Like he figures out like, oh, I get it. Like the more weird shit she does is where she gets her powers from.
Right.
Which is like, oh, that's nice that you didn't go the simple, you know, henpecked stupid husband thing.
No, like Wayman is kind of like appears kind of like gormless, but he's really just like caring and sweet. And like the whole thing, I don't know what's going on, but oh, Joy's here. Like, how did I end up in this room? Oh, my daughter's here. That's cool. I'll go find out what's going on here.
Yeah. It turns out he's full of gorm.
Yeah. It's just he's more sweet than stupid is really the issue. Like, cause like I like how he gives cookies to their tax preparer all the time to the IRS auditor.
Yeah.
Who, and Jamie Lee Curtis is great in this. Like, it's nice to see her be ridiculous. I don't think I've seen her in comedies before, but never like doing this kind of thing. And it seems like she's having a lot of fun with it.
It's also, it's gotta be liberating for someone that, you know, her early career, her looks were not going against her in her early casting. So it must be nice to just gut hanging out and just looking terrible. Just like that's got to be so much fun as someone that came out as like, you know, that came up as like this, you know, the horror vixen. What did people call her? The
Scream Queen?
Scream Queen. Yeah. Like this whole Scream Queen background, but now it's just like,
I mean,
slubby, awful IRS desk.
Yeah, person. I mean, she's great in, you know, Trading Places, Fish Called Wanda, yeah. and like True Lies, but like all those are still like, yeah, you're like the sexy lead, and you'll have some funny stuff too. But
yeah,
this to just be like, you are going to be a cartoon, go do it. And they still have her do different things. Like, so I was thinking about that. Yeah, in the scene where Jobu shows Evelyn the bagel, and how like Jamie Lee Curtis is behind, is one of the acolytes behind her, and like she looks like crap, and I'm like,
yeah,
that's cool. You know what I mean? Just like that you're like, yeah, I don't, yeah, I'll have me look like this, that's fine. I don't need to, I'm not Tom Cruise in Vanilla Sky, I don't need to still be pretty even if I messed up, you know.
Yeah,
but yeah, but this all really starts, because it's not really going to be like a, I think, a point by point thing, but like it's all really starts because Evelyn and her husband Waymond own a laundromat that they live above, and they have a daughter, Joy. The laundromat's not doing great. Evelyn is like trying real hard to get her tax stuff together, because they're getting audited. Waymond, we find out, also is planning to serve for divorce papers, which we learn like isn't really to get divorced. It's more just to have a conversation about their relationship. He's just like pulling the nuclear option to facilitate a conversation.
Yeah, because one of Michelle Yeoh's kind of main characteristic in the beginning of the film is that she does not listen to people.
Mm-hmm.
That she's distracted by everything. There's no, she's never present at all. And Waymond is just desperate to have a conversation with her without something else jumping in the way.
They have a daughter, Joy, who's gay. Michelle Yeoh is sort of trying to accept that, but then her father has come to visit them, played by James Hong, and he absolutely, in her mind, will not accept it. So she wants to keep that a secret. They're also planning to have a party that night, a Chinese New Year party. And I like when they go down there. I got very excited. This is a dumb thing to get excited about. The old man in the laundromat that starts talking to her about like, oh, she's wearing the perfume that his wife wears. And this.
Yeah, the one that keeps smelling her.
Yeah. He is in a great sketch on I Think You Should Leave, where he plays Santa Claus, who's playing a role in a crappy detective show called Crashmore, or a crappy detective movie. And he's very, very funny in that. The guy's name, his listed name on IMDb is Biff Whiff.
Wow.
So... yeah.
Biff Whiff.
Yeah, he's great as that kind of grizzled old character. So, because he is a grizzled old person. Yeah, you get, they really set up the more like family drama aspect of it first. And it's only, as you said, you start to see Ki Hui Kwan do stuff in the background. And it's not until they're going to get audited that Evelyn, Waymond, and her father are all going to the tax thing to get audited. The other Waymond, Alpha Waymond, comes through and starts explaining to her the rules of the universe. That kind of, I like how it jumps you through it. He's like, well, put your shoes on the opposite feet. Imagine you went to the broom closet, press the green button on your Bluetooth headset that I'm giving you. She does, and she goes to this alternate dimension while staying in the current one. And Waymond explains how there's people out to get her and that she might be the savior, and escalates from there.
Yeah, I like there's a section here where she kind of sees her whole life from birth on. And the doctor telling her dad, I'm sorry, it's a girl, made me laugh out loud. It's such a, it's so fucking brutal.
Oh, and then his expression is really great.
Yeah.
Technically, this movie is very impressive of interesting things in how it's shot, how it's put together, where it's like flashing like super fast between these infinite lives that Michelle Yeoh is living. I think that's another thing too, is that it's all, even though it's all infinite, it's all still, it's like time is still an arrow. They're still moving. You're all still moving forward, but you can just hop at whatever moment. You just hop on the different track, whatever moment in time you're at. You can't like go back to be a baby or anything like that, which it would only confuse.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah. But
I just want to be a baby again.
Maybe you and Daniel Scheinert can get together and be adult baby diaper lovers and get spanked by somebody. I don't know if he's an adult baby.
I'm sure,
just
making
all kinds of libelous accusations about this guy. We need to form an LLC. So
allegedly.
Allegedly.
We're cool. Don't even worry about it. Now we got allegedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the secret word that makes you say whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's here that like when she's talking to Waymond, the Alpha Waymond, a evil Jamie Lee Curtis tax preparer comes in and she's got a black circle drawn on her head and starts fighting them. Back in the real world, Michelle Yeoh is confused at what's happening and punches Jamie Lee Curtis in the face, which starts a whole thing, starts security guards showing up. And then Alpha Waymond takes over Waymond and has the fanny pack fight, which is really impressive.
The fanny pack fight is a highlight of this film. It is so fucking good.
And it's very interesting how they get away from that. Because having seen it before, the whole time, I'm like, wait a minute, how do they... Because they caused the thing here. There's a ruckus. Like, you know, he's beating up security guards and cops. She punched a guy in the face. How do they get, like, out of this? And then I, like, remember, it kind of resets at a point.
She jumps into a universe that they decided to go back to the tax to the IRS lady.
Yeah.
So none of the fight happened.
Right.
Which is, yeah, that big reset, which I think is really well done, because trying to escalate the stakes that early in the film, it's just going to be unsustainable. So mm-hmm. having a spot to reset to was nice.
Right. Which is just interesting because that talk about some of the other stuff that happens, but like with that big reset, it's nice that they're like, okay, well, we've had fun. We're going to get a little bit schmaltzier now. We're going to get a little bit heavier with some of this stuff, both in just in terms of like, we're going to really extend this concept of the whole multiverse thing, but we're also going to be a lot more emotional about it. It still works. It doesn't feel like, even though it is a shift, it doesn't feel like that abrupt of a shift, because you're still dealing with some of the stuff, but it does get a lot heavier in the second hour of the movie.
I think it rides that pretty well too. Mm-hmm. Like the way that it'll go heavy, then get funny, but like, it's not, I don't feel like it really took away too much from the kind of heavy stuff to make the jokey things. There's some spots that, yeah, it's a little immature, but I was into it.
In general, I agree. There was some stuff where it's just like, yeah, I'm not feeling it.
Yeah. Like I got tired of the hot dog fingers a little bit.
Yeah. Well, the hot dog fingers,
I think they went to it one too many times.
They went to it one more time. And like the fact that it's like, well, it's not just hot dog fingers. They also ejaculate ketchup and mustard, which is like, okay.
Yeah.
That was,
if that was a one-off joke, I would be all right with it. Cause I could not love more when they say hot dogs. Oh, that must have been a really early evolutionary split. And they cut to like the scene from 2001, yeah. A Space Odyssey of the monkeys, but some of the monkeys have hot dog fingers and others don't. And the ones with the hot dog fingers win the fight. It's so fucking stupid. I love it.
Yeah. But I do like that they managed to turn it into something sweeter. At the end, because then it's like, because one of the alternate universes is Michelle Yeoh is married to Jamie Lee Curtis and they own the laundromat, but they have hot dog for fingers and they actually turn it into like this cute little relationship drama that happens there. And it's very sweet.
She plays the piano for with her toes.
Yeah. But like I said, like they when it starts shooting out ketchup, just some of that stuff was a little bit too much for me. To jump ahead a bit, but like at the end when Michelle Yeoh sort of finds the power of being silly is fun, and she's slapping googly eyes on everybody to take away the power of the evil bagel. That whole side thing where it's like, well, what if I spanked Daniel Scheinhardt and then that will be good? It's like you just took you kind of took the momentum of this and like the thing with the other guy, because she fights with another guy where it seems like she's breaking his neck, but no, she's like giving him acupressure, chiropractic stuff. Like that was fun, but then just like the Daniel Scheinhardt thing just felt like, oh, let's cram a dick joke in here, and it.
Well, they also spray perfume on that guy to remind him of his ex-wife.
Yeah, that was fun, but
yeah, like the spanking thing didn't bother me. I thought it was a funny bit. You know, this repressed guy needs to be.
I don't know. I mean, he has a sex dungeon in his office. It seems like he's kind of embraced it. To a point. So I don't, whatever. I mean, I don't think he has, but
the one being spanked, I don't think has a sex dungeon. The one being spanked is from a universe where he doesn't have a sex dungeon.
Okay. So this is helping.
And
him
this
have,
is the,
have that. No, cause he would, he has a sex dungeon because that's, they're in that same universe when they escape into his room. He always has a sex dungeon apparently.
Okay. Yeah. Then if that's true, that doesn't make a lot of sense. The way that I thought was happening was that he's from a universe where he doesn't have his sex dungeon, which makes him feel better. So it goes, no, look, I know how to make you feel better. Cause in another universe, I saw you in a sex dungeon.
It was the same thing. It's just not one where he threw money at a lady, but whatever. Not trying to kink shame, but it's just, whatever.
Yeah, I was like pretty into this movie. So there was some stuff that I was not watching with a critical eye. I was just kind of like, this is fun. Yeah.
But I think that's a strength of this. Is that first time around, I didn't, you know, I kind of went, eh, but not like in this really, you know, it was more just like, I don't like this passage of jazz. But it is fun. It's for being a almost 2.5 hour movie, I think it keeps the pacing pretty consistent. It keeps the energy up when it needs to, and you don't feel like a huge lull.
When she starts figuring out her powers and goes to the Kung Fu universe, I think mm-hmm. that's where this movie starts, like kind of hitting on all cylinders, where it's just filmed in a style that looks like old Shaw Brothers, you know, Kung Fu. And then there's another universe where her Kung Fu is based only on her pinky. She's a pinky fighter,
yeah.
Which is so fucking stupid. It's great.
It's dumb, but and the fact that it has like the giant protruded muscle in the Kung Fu universe, she's essentially Michelle Yeoh. Like they don't show up, but like she's a famous Chinese actress who's done a lot of martial arts films and like that. And she's at a premiere and runs into a Wayman. Like she did not leave the country. That was a branching point where she didn't run away to America with Wayman. She stayed in China. And in this branching path, she became a famous star, and Wayman shows back up and he's been successful himself. And there's actually some filmmaking stuff in here as well that I wonder is a nod to some of the some like Wong Kar-wai movies, just some of the coloring and like the green of the alleyway that they're in, and like the sort of like strobey slow motion kind of stuff of people walking by.
The alleyway, according to the trivia, I don't know the movie, but according to the trivia, that alleyway is a reference to a Chinese movie that I don't remember the name of. But that's supposed to be like a shot for shot or lighting for lighting kind of reference. Were I more familiar, I'm sure I would know. But I don't, because I'm an American pig dog.
Yep. Yeah. It's an homage to Wong Kar-wai's movies. It's the cinematography that makes heavy use of Wong's signature style, slow-mo shots. In the Mood for Love.
That's In the I'm Mood for Love, I think, is the one I was reading about.
Yeah. Which I actually still haven't seen. I have the whole box set, but I haven't watched that one yet.
Well, boo. Boo to you, sir. In the course of this, we find out that there is a, you know, an entity of pure evil that they think is trying to destroy the universe. They call Jobu something.
Mm-hmm. Tupaki.
The Jobu is the important part.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen the movie Major League?
Yeah,
I see on your little smirky. Because boy, every time you came up, I go, fuck you, Jobu.
Up your butt, Jobu. Yep.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, they in the trivia, they said they just picked out random, you know, syllables to make it be silly as possible. Like, well, you picked out random syllables that they also did in the 1986 classic Major League.
You're absolutely showing your ignorance of cinema by not recognizing Jobu from Major League. Yeah, I think that is a movie that like a certain age of people are like, hell yeah, Major League, but no one else has ever seen it because why would you?
I think it was just on TV a lot when we were young is the thing. Is I don't think any of us actually wanted to watch that movie. It just was always on.
Well, I had sports friends, like people that were into sports. And so it was like, well, I'll watch a movie, sure. And so I would watch that with them.
So they're setting up Jobu as this great evil, and it's essentially revealed that it's an alternate version of their daughter, Joy.
Mm-hmm.
And that introduction, where she arrives out of the elevator just dressed ridiculously with a pet pig. She's dressed as like Elvis.
Basically, yeah.
And she's got a pet pig. And it's so great. And Michelle Yeoh's response is, Joy, why do you look so stupid?
Uh-huh.
It's mwah, chef's kiss. Like, it's rad on your head, chef's kiss.
Because it's ridiculous. Yeah, she's always dressed just absurdly. And Stephanie Soo, who plays Joy, is again great. They ask her to do a lot, and she does phenomenally. You could really get into some questions here about, because when she shows up, she's basically able to manipulate space and matter. She's able to jump from universe to universe, no problem, which is a thing that in the Alpha universe, Michelle Wong's character, Evelyn, basically like pushed her to do and like destroyed her life and her mind to have her do that. So she's on this mission of vengeance to find like this other Evelyn that could potentially have the same power and destroy her, as well as creating the bagel that we've been referencing. We'll get into. But when she shows up, like she makes blows up a guy's head with confetti, turns the guy's head to confetti, makes another guy put on a Carmen Miranda dress and get shot. So if you stop to think about that Jobu can do all this stuff later when Jobu is not doing all this stuff, why come is that? You know, like it seems like later, like why couldn't she just turn Evelyn into confetti?
I think that actually is a character choice.
But yes, I think that's fair.
What we're meant to take away is that Joy wants to be talked out of it, because there's a scene later where there are rocks, which, by the way, might be the best scene in any movie ever made.
That was a cute scene. I did enjoy that.
She was pissed because she's like, I was really hoping that you would talk me out of it, like that you would see this in some other way. And I think that that's like what's happening, is that she's not using her ultimate powers against her mom, because deep down she wants her mom to become an equal and talk her out of being, you know.
But it does. I think there are other examples where that could have been done.
Yeah.
But I don't really care. You know, I bring it up, but yeah, the movie, it's like, hey, this is fun. Let's do something else that's fun. And that's fine. I'm having a good time.
I like how they introduced the black hole, the bagel black hole,
mm-hmm.
where they do that thing that you did in grade school, where you put your hands together and you split your fingers and it kind of looks like a butthole.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what it was supposed to look like. I don't even remember.
I think it's supposed to look like a vagina.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. I haven't seen either of those, so yeah.
Look in a mirror.
I get it. It's because I'm awful.
Yeah. Your face is a sphincter.
But I really enjoyed that because I just haven't thought about that in 35 years, mm-hmm. I'm going to guess. Really fun. But I wish I had thought of it, basically, that I got bored and I wanted to make a bagel with an everything bagel. So I made an everything bagel, which is gets so ultra dense that it collapses into itself into a black hole. It becomes a singularity.
Yeah.
That's very smart and also very stupid, which is exactly yes. my style of humor.
Yeah.
I love it.
As someone that is, you know, you're no stranger to this, that we both suffer from depression and all that, but like that spoke a lot to how I get when I, my kind of like rust coalness when I get so depressed yeah. about just like how nothing matters and it's all bullshit and all this stuff. And so I thought that was very effective as well. Just that kind of, that seemed like that came from a genuine place. It wasn't just like, yeah, I feel sad sometimes. It was like, no, if you start looking at everything, you realize that nothing matters and I can do anything. And I'm still miserable and I hate it.
Though it did remind me, it reminded me of that, the Zen guy, the Zen monk walks up to the hot dog vendor and the hot dog vendor's like, what do you want? He's like, well, make me one with everything.
Right.
It's like, this is like kind of like an opposite version of that joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I use the joke, the word joke, like very loosely here.
But yeah, but it's a funny bit. And I do like it. It explains why everyone has the black circle on their head, all of Jobu's followers. But I do love all of the ridiculous outfits that they put Stephanie Soo in. Like they're wild.
That green one where she's like dressed as like a paramecium. I don't even know what the fuck that was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Was delightful.
Yeah. But I think I honestly, like if I had that ability, even if I wasn't like as depressed and as nihilistic as her, like I would be wearing a lot more capes. Like that would just be, I would dress like super dumb. Cause like, why not? I can change my clothes like that. So we'll see if this works. We'll see if I can get away with the pirate shirt.
Yeah. I think I'd probably, because assumingly you can change your body as well. So I would probably like go full Slender Man and just walk around as like an 11-foot gangly thing that's dressed like Jack Skellington a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Like look through people's windows.
Well, yeah, or just like if you can get to a universe where that is the normal way of looking, because in theory there would be a Slender Man universe.
Yeah. So all I'd have to do is find the unlikeliest thing possible. Like, hey, look, let me introduce her to my girlfriend. Uh-huh. And then all of a sudden, whoa.
Oh, nice.
See what I did there? Yeah, I nailed myself because I can't find love. I do the bit where Michelle Yeoh being the savior is explained that the reason that she can have all these powers and almost equal joy is because she's living the worst version of her life.
Yes.
Everyone felt that. And two, what a brilliant little bit of writing. Like it's changing the trope of like being the chosen one to like, no, it's just that you suck so hard.
Yeah. That, well, it made me think of, did you ever watch Red Dwarf?
I've seen like an episode or two.
There's an episode where the hologram guy, I think his name's Rimmer or something like that. There's a alternate version of him that is like amazing. His name's like Ace or something like that. And he's just like this super fantastic pilot heroic guy. And Rimmer's just a piece of shit. And so it feels like it's sort of an expansion of that kind of idea, but it's not necessarily that she's evil or bad. It's just, he just sucks at everything. And so she's better at being able to absorb the powers of other universes.
Yeah, what a great superpower, being terrible. I mean, you can see why I would like that as an idea.
But it's also funny because that means in the universe where she's a pizza sign spinner, she's living a better life than Evelyn.
Yeah, it's pretty bleak.
Yeah. But she, that was a fun bit because during one of the kung fu scenes that she, because she's randomly, as we talked about earlier, like randomly trying to get powers from other universes to try to do this fight. She takes over a version of her that's a sign spinner and then uses it to fling a riot shield around and do some neat kung fu. And it's one of those, like, I don't know, as she's getting on in years, as we all are, but how much of those fight scenes are all Michelle Yeoh and how much are not due to age, insurance, whatever. But she does a lot of the choreography there. They're just clearly like that fight is shrouded heavily in shadow. And if watching any more recent Steven Seagal movie has taught me anything, it's that if the character's face is in shadow, that's probably not them.
I think some of the more advanced fight stuff was not her, but there's some stuff that, you can tell she's still doing some pretty hard stuff.
And I'm not trying to take away from her because she's amazing and is very talented in that department. But
I meant to ask you about the original cast for this. So one, Awkwafina was going to be Joy.
I mean, like it would have been fine, but it wouldn't have worked for me. I think not knowing who Stephanie Soo is, it works a little bit better than just being like, oh, it's Awkwafina being wacky again.
Yes. Same. And the original version of this, the lead role was written for Jackie Chan. It was going to be a male lead. Jackie Chan said no. And then it ended up, they were like, oh, we'll get Michelle Yeoh. We'll switch it around. But very different movie with Jackie Chan.
Yeah. And that would have been fun. But I also I think making it a mother-daughter thing is a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
I just think that gives an extra element to it. And again, having it be Michelle Yeoh, who has done more dramatic work than Jackie Chan, I feel like.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least stateside.
I would have found it very awkward. I can't imagine it'd be nearly as good of a movie.
Yeah. I think some of the more serious stuff maybe wouldn't have hit as hard, or at least it would have felt, and maybe it's just because they're like Jackie Chan's more well known. Like it would have felt like a commentary about Jackie Chan specifically. And while that's true with some of Michelle Yeoh stuff, because she's that character that's like that, it doesn't feel as like centered in that, if that makes any sense. Whereas this would have been like,
and then we'd probably get a scene where like Chris Tucker walks out and be like, you understand the hot dogs that are coming out of my mouth? And yeah, it's just awkward.
Yeah. It would have felt like it was about Jackie Chan and not this character. So yeah, there's some smart moves there. I'm glad that didn't happen. But yeah, there's nothing against Awkwafina in this department. It's just, I think she's too big of a name or too recognizable.
Too big of a name and too, I think too silly for this.
Yeah. I mean, I really liked that.
Shang-Chi. You loved Shang-Chi.
She was really good in The Farewell, and that did not require that kind of stuff. I think it would have been, it still would have been more distracting, I think. And I really I like what Stephanie Hsu does here. I like the little, how you know that Jobu transfers universes, that just cocks her head. That's like she's tuning herself to find the right universe. And so she'll just cock her head a certain way and jump to a different universe.
Yeah, it's a good choice. There's a great fight scene somewhere around where we're talking about when Big Nose shows up and tries to use her Pomeranian as a tool, as a weapon. What a delightful little sequence.
Right.
That I can't believe that hasn't been done before.
Well, it's,
and maybe it has, and I've just never seen it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've seen something where a dog's been used as a weapon before, but it's like the fact that you're able to sell it as completely silly, but also this could be a danger, but also I'm not really concerned that you're abusing an animal right now. That's a tough line to cross, but or a tough line to stay on. But I thought they did a good job there, because that was a lot of fun. Because the stuff at the taxpayer stuff is just blowing up. They're trying to clear the building. Cops are showing up, and Alpha Wayman and Evelyn are trying to get out. And yeah, they encounter Jenny Slate from earlier, who was a customer at the laundromat. Yeah, she's got a dog and uses it like Gogo Yubari in Kill Bill, ball and chain weapon. And that's where Evelyn like jumps into being a teppanyaki chef and is able to use things to cut off the leash and send the dog flying.
You keep saying that. You use that term twice. I don't know what teppanyaki is.
It's like cook on the table.
So like I've never been to one of those, but like the ones where they like flip the shrimp up.
Yeah,
and stuff,
it's teppanyaki. Okay. I'm saying it with a B, but it's a.
You still knew many more letters than I did, because I didn't know the word for that. Got it. I thank you for your knowledge, sir.
No problem. I'm the king. But and then there's the fight where you start figuring out, because there's a bunch of like Jobu acolytes that are trying to fight her as well. And that's where you really start to find out that something weird is Alpha Wayman is in a van in the Alpha universe with a couple other people. This is where all this universe jumping started. And that's where you really get like, you have to do something weird to jump to different universes. And that's where you get the idea that, oh, there's this butt plug looking award that Jamie Lee Curtis's character has won. If you put that in your butt, you can steal skills from someone in another universe. And so there's a fight over a guy trying to use a butt plug to fight against her. And then another guy comes leaping over the wall to land on the butt plug. And then another guy shoves something up his butt. And then they're better at Kung Fu than, I guess. I don't know. That is just real eye roll.
Let me break down this scene a little bit. So because I am essentially a Mythbuster at heart, I would just like to say, doesn't work. Just leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah. I would like to not bust whatever is happening there in any capacity.
Oh, I assure you it got busted, but not in the way I was hoping.
I think I've seen that video online. And it was like, Michelle Yeoh having like, pull it out to stop their kung fu thing just felt like, you're making Michelle Yeoh do this. Okay, that's fine.
Not my favorite scene at all. That was, I think, the scene that made me think this isn't going to hold up as well on the rewatch.
It's
because I was fine with it, mm-hmm. but because I wasn't thinking about it at all.
Yeah, it's not great, but it's a speed bump. That's all it is. If there was much more of that, I would have been more bummed, but they're able to get it out of, they don't get it out of their system, but I mean, they're able to sort of channel that in a very direct, certain moments that are like, if you want to, you could just fast forward. It doesn't matter. But I do like that eventually Evelyn because Evelyn's mind's going crazy with all the universe jumping that she's doing. She basically like has her big fight with Jobu and loses. And then the movie ends. But then it doesn't end.
That end was really fun. I like when people commit to that bit because it lasted a while for, I mean, in terms of a movie. You know, they do the end, it lasts a little, like they roll credits for enough that I'm like pretty sure this is supposed to be a long movie. Like it's not that I bought that it was over, right. But it there was a sense of, wait, is it over?
It made you question anyway.
Yes.
And it pulls back to reveal that this is the movie that Kung Fu movie star Michelle Yeoh was in and where she met Waymond. And so then they're able to jump out from there. And then this is sort of the hero shutdown moment. You're able to reset back to the universe where they're, as we talked about, where they're going to go back and see the tactical power. All the fights didn't happen. But this eventually just leads to Michelle Yeoh succumbing to all of that, to just being like, yeah, the universe is shit. This is all terrible. And, you know, my daughter hates me and is trying to kill me. And none of this seems to really matter. She eventually, Joy and her like transport to just be rocks. As you mentioned earlier, they're just rocks on a cliff face and they're in a universe where the conditions for life never happened. And there's a lot of universes like that, actually. And as they are rocks, you just see like text on the screen. It's a very interesting way to have like an emotional moment in the movie, but it worked. Like I was totally on board for it.
Couldn't love it more.
Yeah. Cause they're just talking about how nothing matters. It's not until really that Michelle Yeoh like goes nuts at their, in this alternate reset universe, whatever, their customer appreciation, New Year's Eve party, Chinese New Year party. She's just kind of gets fed up with the whole thing and like smashes a window. And like Jamie Lee Curtis comes in with cops to arrest them for tax evasion or all the stuff because they missed the deadline. Michelle Yeoh's like, I don't give a shit, whatever. It's only through Waymond being a nice guy that she's able to dodge, get out of this. Because Jamie Lee Curtis recognizes like, oh yeah, you're the divorce thing. When I got divorced, when my husband left me, I drove my Kia like through a wall or, you know, through a house. She starts figuring out that like Waymond is this sort of secret key. And it's not just like the concept of Waymond or that he's another alpha-verse person or whatever. It's that like this is a human being that loves her and it's not just you alone in this, that there are people with you. I mean, it's very simplistic to just be like love conquers all, but that is part of the message of it all.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, the other kind of thing, I was joking about it before, but it is the whole mindfulness be yeah. here now yeah. deal that it doesn't matter in infinite of universes, it doesn't matter. It's if right now you can find joy in a googly eye, mm-hmm. that's perfect. That's a great universe. And it doesn't, you know, you can't look longingly at what you don't have.
Right. And I like that the googly eye thing comes from that Waymond keeps putting googly eyes on different things around the house, like including other customers' laundry, which I really liked. And at one point, like the baseball bat that she uses to smash the window, she finds out has googly eyes on it.
Yeah, he's kind of adorable.
Yeah, Waymond's just a big sweetheart. In the face of all this and knowing that like she signed the divorce papers and is not happy with him and has made things worse, he's still just like, well, we'll get through this and then I'm just going to clean up the broken window. And it doesn't feel like this very like sycophantic, like I'll do whatever you say. I have no personality of my own or whatever. It's more just, no, Wayman's a nice guy. That's it.
Yeah, and he's singing while he's cleaning up the glass. It's a very sweet moment. What a sweet man. I want a man like Wayman.
But I particularly like that in the other universe where all the fighting is still happening, that her dad, Gong Gong, as he's called, James Hong's character, is in on it as well. He's like, Alpha Gong Gong has taken over that guy and has like his souped up his wheelchair with like all kinds of like a Mr. Coffee and all this stuff, and then later turns it into a mech suit. I love that bit. That was all really great. Michelle Yeoh like has this sort of determination, like just like, yeah, finding joy in this moment, and then is able to turn. She gets shot and is able to turn the bullet. It doesn't enter her head, but she's able to turn it into a googly eye and start slapping googly eyes all her assailants that is knocking them out of the being under Jobu's control and is showing them joy is nice. And other than the Daniel Scheinert getting spanked, I really thought that scene was great.
Yeah, and there's some background stuff there too. Like some guy's got a puppy. Somebody else has like has some stickers on his lapel. There's all these like little tiny moments of joy. And yeah, she realizes that she's no longer going to fight violently. She's going to fight like the way Waylon does. Weyoun from Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, yeah. Jeffrey Combs.
That she's gonna she's gonna fight using kindness, and it's a lovely sentiment. And you know, you've often lamented in Marvel movies where every movie ends with like a big glowing pillar of light that we have to fight against. Like, this is like such a subversion. Like, yeah, I'm going to fight with nice.
No, and it works really well because then it doesn't necessarily like solve the entire problem, because as soon as, even though that's done, Jobu slash Joy is still like, I, whatever, I'm going in here. I don't care. Leave me alone. I'm going to hop into the donut or to the bagel and eradicate myself. And she kind of lets her at first, like, okay, yeah, you can totally do it. But then starts thinking about their lives together and all this stuff and pulls her out. But even in the universe, the now sort of reset universe, Joy's still upset. Michelle Yeoh tries to do this gesture of to her father, of like, this is Joy and this is her girlfriend, Becky. Finally is able to come, but then Joy's like, get out of here. Like, you drive me nuts. I can't be around you. You're causing me so much pain. And they actually have like this emotional moment, a human being argument. I thought that was nice. It didn't just end with like, well, this fantastic thing happened, so everything's fine now. It's more just like, well, that was a huge part of it, but we're still human beings and we need to repair this relationship we have if we can. And it's a very sweet moment and both actors do a fantastic job with it.
That's the point that I thought the kind of emotional arc really paid itself off, that, mm-hmm. you know, that could be saccharine and stupid, but it's like, no, we went through steps with both of these characters and understand the catharsis that they're coming to. And it's not an easy catharsis. It's not, oh, good one. It's, we're coming to terms that we're all complicated people. Like, everybody sucks, I think it was the line in us. Like, it's, everything is terrible and you just have to make peace with that and, you know, find the googly eyes and everything.
Yeah. And I know, like, because it's impossible to like or dislike a movie a normal amount online. And I realize our show is called John Alice Hate Stuff, but people go nuts over this movie and will like go like freak out if you say that you have any kind of problem with it. But then on the opposite, there's a lot of too cool for school people that are like, well, it was just a Reddit movie or whatever. And you can pick out those lines, like, you know, Daniel Kwan saying, you know, in another life, I would have enjoyed doing taxes and laundry with you, and be like, well, I know that this isn't for me. I think that's schmaltzy and stupid. But I think everything around it cushions that line nicely, you know, and like it's not just pablum. It actually means something.
This movie, because the emotional impact of it and how it developed and with like it was good emotion, good movie made.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
I had a thought of like, Did I misunderstand Swiss Army Man? Do I need to go back and rewatch it? Like, nah, it's not. Yeah, I can't. I'm not going to do that. But that's how good this movie was. Maybe you think like, maybe I missed it. You know, maybe it was my fault.
No, I went in as like as guarded as I could possibly be, because I'm just like, people have said it's fun, but God damn it, I hate that movie. I might have even told Hazel. I might have even said like, I might leave during this. If we do, I'll just go next door to the wine bar or something and just see me later. But like, that may have to happen because I hate Swiss Army Man that much. And it didn't at all. Like, it was fine. And I'm happy to report that. And I hope they continue, because I do think like we've really barely touched on like how wildly stylistic this movie is. And I think it's very technically impressive and it all works very, very well. And I hope they're able to continue that. And like I said, I just think some of the more immature stuff is just that. And I think on subsequent viewings, it's way more distracting when you see what like, oh, there's actually like a really good emotional core here. And the performances are so strong that some of the wacky, the more outlandishly wacky stuff, it just feels a little grating, but it's still great. I still highly recommend this. Yeah,
there's also a spot the part of the kind of the denouement at the end when things are starting to wrap up, which is what denouement means. So I didn't have to describe that.
Teppanyaki.
Grandpa ends up hanging out a little bit with Becky,
yeah.
Joey's girlfriend, and he seems fine with it. And she's like, Grandpa says girlfriend, and she's like, can someone tell me what he just said? Like, I don't speak whichever variant of Chinese they're speaking there. I was like, oh, that's a sweet little moment. Also, I don't know which Chinese that was, so apologies to audience at home. Apparently Mandarin and Cantonese were both in this movie, and my ears aren't Chinese.
But yeah, I thought that was sweet, and it didn't really feel like, a lot of the wrap-up didn't feel like nice and pat and clean. It felt like we still have a life to live here. We're just going to work through it. Because at the end, they're at the test pair thing, and Jamie Lee Curtis is like, okay, you've done a lot better here. It means you're listening, but you're also not listening. And as she's starting to say stuff, Michelle starts like, it seems like she's hearing all the other universes or something, but she's like looking around, smiling at her family. And then she's like, I'm sorry, what did you say? So it's nice, like, that's still all there. She is learning to be here in the moment. That doesn't mean that she's conquered that entirely, but she's working at it. And I think that's the kind of ending I start to appreciate more and more. Rather than just being like, oh, it's all
fine. Yeah, right there with you. I would like to tell the audience that this movie's delightful and you should 100% watch it. If somehow it's still in a theater, go watch it in a theater, because I'm bummed I didn't get that opportunity. It was fun in a
theater for sure. But yeah, I would say absolutely watch this. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture. I think it's too, because by the time this comes out, Oscars will have happened. I think it's a little too like wacky. Oscar likes to, you know, take itself too seriously.
Yeah, there's too much
comedy. I do think you're probably going to see some acting awards from it. None of this stuff really like matters or is based on any like real, like this art is good, so we awarded it. It's usually like a form of apology for something, or you know, political Hollywood behind the scenes.
As much as I don't care about the Oscars, I really hope Michelle Yeoh wins, because she's so fucking good in this, and she's good at everything. But
having that level of recognition, I think is you can't deny that element to it, that it could give some people like a more deserved recognition than they're normally getting. But I do think that, I don't know, like you said, I think the a lot of the Oscars are dumb. I haven't watched them in years, and like someone online was talking about recently, like all the more like the recent Best Picture winners, and so many of them in like the last 10 years are just like, oh, I barely fucking remember that movie. What was that? I mean, the one last year was Coda, which was like a TV movie basically about like a deaf girl that learns to love music or something. I don't know, but like
that was Best Picture last year.
Nomadland. I don't think I've even heard of that movie. Green Book, which yeesh, already has not aged well.
Oh, yeah, Green Book was big though. Yeah.
Whatever. Point is that the Oscars are dumb, but I'm with you that I'm like, I want the cast to win awards here, because I think they're all amazing and it would just bring me a lot of joy to see them do well. It's been a while since I've seen a movie like that, where I'm just like, it matters to me whether or not you win this award.
Yeah, I'm there with you. Speaking of awards, John, would you like to award the audience with a recommendation of something
Absolutely.
You've seen recently?
Absolutely. So Criterion Channel had put up a bunch of old Michelle Yeoh movies from the 80s and 90s. I've been watching those and they're great. Two big recommendations for me. Yes, Madam, which was actually directed by Corey Yoon, who I think he did like the Transporter movies, the DOA, Dead or Alive, the video game adaptation movie. But fun comedy action thing. It's her and Cynthia Rothrock. And then The Heroic Trio, which is a Johnny Toe directed movie. And more superhero movies need to be like Johnny Toe movies. They're just ridiculous. Physics don't matter. You can really just like see the budget everywhere, but it's so much fun. And it's her, Maggie Cheung, and Anita Mui, which you might remember was Jackie Chan's like stepmother in Drunken Master. We both really liked her.
Oh, that lady. Yeah, I know.
It's great. She is Wonder Woman. Michelle Yeoh is Invisible Woman, and Maggie Cheung is the Thief Catcher, and it's ridiculous. And I'm gonna.
I mean, it sounds awesome.
It's so much fun. And just like a lot of energy and color, and it's great.
Maybe it's a recommendation. I watched the dumbest movie I've ever seen in my life. And that's me saying this. I watched Moonfall.
Oh, yeah.
Starring Owl Guy from Watchmen and Samuel Tarly. And I think...
Isn't Jerb
No, Butler? No, the Owl Guy from Watchmen.
Patrick Wilson.
That guy. Patrick Wilson. I couldn't remember his name. Halle Berry is fucking terrible in it. There is a young actor kid in it that couldn't be worse.
Mm.
The plot is unbelievably stupid. Patrick Wilson does his job. He's like, man, he's putting in a C performance. Like, he's like, I'm showing up, man. I'm saying the lines. I'm doing them somewhat well.
That's what he does.
The logic of the movie is ridiculous. The physics are ridiculous. It's Roman Emmerich. It's every part of it goes wrong. So the plot of the movie, just quickly, is that the moon's falling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the moon fall. Because there's like bad robots on the moon.
Sure.
And that's the whole plot. So at one point, I'm going to give a little spoiler here. So if you're going to watch Moonfall, this won't matter. So who gives a shit? They have to take a shuttle up to the moon to like stop it from falling.
Mm-hmm.
But the space shuttle has one of the engines out. There's three engines. There's only two functional ones. So you know how they solve this problem? They wait for the moon to be above the rocket, so the gravity of the moon would suck the rocket up harder, and then you could go to the moon and save things.
That sounds like science.
The emotional stuff makes no sense. This movie is fascinating. If you like bad movies, watch Moonfall. It's a work of anti-art. Like, it is the exact opposite of artisan things. It is Roland Emmerich at his worst. Boy, yes, a Moonfall.
All right. I'm excited to check that out.
It's, oh boy. Yeah. Maybe you should do it for Bad Movie Night. It's, there's so much in it.
Yeah. It's, oof. Yeah. We just did the, that Bionic Man TV movie, Bionic Ever After, which was very bad, but this sounds like bad with tons of money behind it is always interesting to me.
Oh, there's a lot of money. It looks great. Like there's so much. Some of the special effects are beautiful. Like the one of the robot moon guys looks really cool. Like there's good stuff in it. It's everything is bad too. Yeah, it's fascinating. I would if anybody watches it out there, report back to me. So John, for next episode of John and Alex Hate Stuff, what movie would you like to watch and then discuss?
I don't know. I wish there was someone that could tell me what to do, like
someone that could like pull your strings,
kind of, but not maybe less of a puppet thing, but more like a guru of some sort.
What if someone could grant your wish?
Oh, I would love to watch Wishmaster again. That would be great.
Yeah, but the word master brings something to mind. Baiting.
I was going to say, you're not just going to let that sit there, right?
Nope. Yeah, so we're going to watch The Master, the 2012 movie with Philip Seymour Hoffman, directed by some famous person that I forget. It's supposed to be great. Paul Thomas Anderson, that's it. Yeah. Honestly, if you forced me at gunpoint to guess, I would have gotten it within two. I don't know who the first one would be, but it's definitely up there. Shut up, Alex. So yeah, we're going to watch The Master. It's available on HBO Max, I think. If it's still called HBO Max by the time this episode comes out, because they're changing their name again.
Right.
Yeah, that's it. Find us on Twitter at JawsPod. We're on Facebook, John and Alex Hate Stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we have an Instagram. We have a Patreon, patreon.com/AlexBolin. If you sign up for like $1, you can get like many hours of back audio that you've never heard. So if you like the show, I have the tiers set incredibly badly as far as like a money making venture is concerned. So take advantage of me being bad at money and listen to our back catalog.
That's right. And I'm going, I need to do a, I want to do a, we talked about it, but I wanted to do a solo ep about, I recently watched Skinamarink and rewatched Skinamarink and then The Outwaters. And I'd like to talk about both of those. So I'll probably do a little solo jam about that.
I would like to host that.
Excellent. We can do that on the Patreon.
Exactly. So patreon.com/AlexBolin, and all the links are on John Alex 8 stuff, and we will see you next time.
Goodbye.